We have been drawn here together by our ties to William Hall. We are here as his family, friends, and colleagues, the many of us who were enriched and blessed by knowing and working with him. In us live the memories of the times and places which filled his life, memories of times spent together, common work, and common passion, the memories which live in our hearts and minds. His life was long, rich, and full. This afternoon is for the sacred work of recounting and celebrating his life. As we begin in this process, I invite Margot Hall, Bill's daughter, to share remembrances with you.
When my mother was 34 years old and a confirmed old maid, she enlisted the services of a famous fortune teller in Syracuse who was known for his accuracy in his predictions. And the story he told her, she knew had no validity. The fortune teller told her she would get married to someone from the Northwest, have 2 to 3 children, and would travel frequently to Europe and beyond, all the while visiting museums, meeting artists, painters, and dignitaries, although by middle age there would be a tragedy that would turn her world upside down, after which more travels would ensue, along with moves to different parts of the country. Well, it was too late for my mom to get her money back from the fortune teller, so she went home to 530 Oak Street and told her mom the fantastical fortune, and both had a good laugh over that whopper. Within 2 months, my Aunt Betts, also known as Betty Woes, brought in a gang of SU graduate students, and my dad was in tow. He asked Betty, who was that beautiful young woman in the living room? And Betty said, oh, don't bother with her. That's my little sister. Fortunately, Dad didn't take that advice, and within 6 months, they were married. My father was from a small farming community in eastern Washington state. The first part of the fortune came true. While my father's professional career is well documented, what is less known are my father's early years and what formed the man he was about to become. Sadly, I never knew my grandparents on my father's side because both had died before my father married. My dad's mom had quite an unusual upbringing. Her mother, my great-grandmother, died young in childbirth, leaving 2 small girls behind. So my great-grandfather, who was in sales and traveled most of the time, he left his daughters on a Native American reservation and school in Montana. So in the late 19th century, my grandmother and my great-aunt Eva were actually playing real cowboys and Indians with their friends on the reservation at the school. Both girls had pinto ponies, and according to family legend, my great aunt was quite plump and loved riding the open Montana plains on her pony. Her Native American friends loved to give out nicknames, and my great aunt became Floating Mountain Flower. My dad's father owned the principal mercantile store in the county in Washington, in eastern Washington state. He did not know what to do with his only son, who loved housewares department and women's fashion in the store. The earliest picture I have of my dad was when he was 4 years old. His parents had staged a picture of him with a small rifle and a dead squirrel. There were tears streaming down my father's face because he was so upset about the squirrel. My father never liked hunting, despite both of his parents were skilled with rifles. Dad tried to please his father by joining the high school football team, although he never took to the sport. In turn, my grandfather sent Dad off to Hill Military Academy in Portland, Oregon, to toughen him up. Again, he did not take to the military academy. As a newlywed, my father thought he would take his new bride to Montana, where he owned property on Flathead Lake and wanted to start a lakeside resort there. After about 1 month of what my mother called extreme roughing it, Dad brought my mom home back to Syracuse. There were lots of stories from my mom about bears and outhouses. Montana was not her cup of tea. So Dad bought G.R. Crocker's in downtown Syracuse, a fine china store that handled Wedgwood and Spode, and my parents were soon off to England, buying china at factories throughout Great Britain. Along came my older brother, Freddie, and then me 5 years later. Hence, the 2 to 3 kids that was predicted by the fortune teller an earlier decade. In 1963, the tragedy that the fortune teller spoke about unfolded. My dad received a call from the boarding school in Philadelphia where my brother was attending. Freddie was unconscious in the hospital, and within 4 days, my older brother was dead. Out of this extreme tragedy, a stronger, lifelong bond was cemented with Ted's good friend, Ted Hancock, who helped Dad to simply get through it all. After more than a decade of owning Crocker's, Ted's friend, Ted Hancock, told him about the directorship at the Everson Museum. It was an exciting time to be at the Everson because there would be an architectural competition for the new facility. A relatively unknown architect in the late 50s was chosen to design the new Everson by the name of I.M. Pei. Pei was Dad's first choice. 2 years later, when my brother died, and this is getting into the 60s, early 60s, my father accepted the position of executive director of the newly formed Kentucky Arts Commission. A move was needed for both my parents after Freddie's death. What floors me to this day was the pinpoint accuracy of the fortune teller in the late 1940s who projected into the future 25 years later. Recently, I was having coffee with a good friend of mine in Cambridge, and she talked about dysfunctional families. I told her I thought mine was functional, and she said, "Margot, there's no such thing as a functional family." And I said, "Well, we got pretty close." And she said to me, "Well, that's boring." Growing up in the Hull household was anything but boring. My parents loved the theater, and many warm summers we spent in Stratford-upon-Avon in Canada with the top British actors playing Shakespeare. Every year, as a teenager, our family would go on theater junkets to London and see the latest drama, farces, and perhaps a musical. What amazed me growing up were the deep, lifelong friends my father made, the stories that were shared over one of Dad's homemade pies and a good bottle of wine. His friends became our extended family with stories that added a richness to ours. One such friend of Dad's was Dr. Peter Witt. While Dad was the director of the Everson, a board member said, "You really need to visit the Witts in DeWitt." He had an extensive collection of all major impressionists, but they were all miniature paintings. And Dad visited and looked at a collection that was beyond belief. At first, Peter said that his parents visited Paris while the Impressionists were struggling artists. After years of friendship and many shared meals with the Witts, we put together an amazing story of a wealthy German Jewish family and how a chauffeur drove the family to Switzerland during the height of Nazi Germany, supposedly for a weekend trip. And in the few bags they carried were all the miniature Impressionists. The many large paintings of the Impressionists were left behind in their house that has become a national museum in the middle of Berlin. Peter and Inga's two daughters were close to my age and became my friends. And Dr. Witt went on to become a researcher in Raleigh, North Carolina, one of 8 arachnidologists in the world. Once they visited us up at Selkirk, our summer home, Dr. Witt spied a small spider on our porch. He explained how rare the spider was, and we were then scrambling to find a matchbox, punch holes in it, and arrange for a special overnight delivery of the spider to Raleigh. I never looked at spiders in the same way. There are too many close friends like the Witts to mention, but looking back at my father's life, I was grateful to be a part of it all that added a rich tapestry to a life well lived. One of my father's greatest joys in his life was his granddaughter, Tavery. I will always remember when Tavery was 8, she put on a CD of Pink Martini, and the two of them danced away in the living room. Thank you.